Hey guys, welcome to the Faith and Field podcast. I'm the host, Grant Benson. If you haven't already, check out episode 0 to hear my story. The mission of the Faith and Field podcast is to give all athletes a platform to share their testimonies and experiences of what God has done in their life. My hope is that God will reach athletes who need to hear these stories in order to strengthen their faith and enable their athletic journeys. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast and give us a follow on Instagram, faith_N_. We're active on Instagram, so give us a DM, let us know what you think, or even a prayer request. I pray that this podcast will be a good representation of Christ. Thank you for listening, and God bless. Hey all, welcome to the Faith and Field podcast. This is episode 11. Today I have the honor of speaking with Daniel McKim. Daniel is a former collegiate athlete and a 4-time Highland Games world champion. We had a great conversation about his faith journey, his growth as an athlete, and had lots of laughs about his Instagram page and how he became a Little Debbie snack ambassador. He's also a creator of some of the funniest lifting parodies on his Instagram page. If you're not already, you need to follow him at Daniel McKim on Instagram. Thank you for listening, guys. God bless. Check out our Instagram page and give us some feedback. We'll talk to you soon. Have fun. Without further ado, episode 11, Daniel McKim. Thank you for listening. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to the Faith and Field podcast. This is episode 11. Today I have the blessing and honor to speak with one of the most funniest Instagram influential, whatever you want to call it, guys out there. His name is Daniel McKim, 4-time Highland Games world champion. Get this, he's a Little Debbie Snacks ambassador. I mean, I don't even know how that happened, but we'll get into that a little bit later. And a creator of some of the best and funniest lifting parodies out there. Some of my favorites are like the stereotypes at the gym, when lifters meet other lifters. And then my all-time favorite and recently, and should be a Netflix series. So Netflix, pick this up, The Strength Family. So please welcome Daniel McKim. Thank you for coming on, Daniel. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Grant. That's quite the intro, man. Nothing. I'll try not to let you down. At least chuckle a couple times today, right? But
yeah,
no, you're
good.
It, it's good to be
That's
here.
Good. So yeah, man, I appreciate everything you do, and those of you who follow kind of know what I'm talking about. But it's kind of neat to see just the content you put out there, but then also just you know, digging a little bit farther further into who you are. Just your faith is like a big, strong part of your life. Can you maybe talk about, like, as you were growing up, was that something that was instilled at a young age, or when did you come into to knowing who Christ was?
Sure, man. I was very, very fortunate and blessed to be raised in a Christian home. My dad's a pastor, so, and I have two brothers, and so, man, we were, every time the church was open, we were there, right? And even when it wasn't open, we were there helping, putting things away, carrying things. So many times in my dad's ministry, I would get pulled out to nursing homes, to, you know, tense situations, all the way to some people's deathbeds. And so at the time, I didn't always understand that as a kid, right? But as I've gotten older, I've respected that and appreciated those scenarios and situations my dad and mom put me in, you know. But I came to the Lord, at a young age, and that was I'm just so thankful for it, right? And you have these great testimonies of people where they were in a dark spot and drugs and alcohol and all those things, and God pulled them out of it. I don't have that story, but I'm thankful for that. Because God enabled me to be raised in a Christian home. I was saved at a very young age and grew up from there. And man, God's awesome, man. And that's what's crazy. That's what's great about these crazy times, is that when all else seems to fail and when all else seems all over the place, we know God's there. We know God's going to take care of us.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And it's a good reminder for, you know, us as believers to understand that, you know, we're just in a season of life right now. And we're not like, this is not how it's going to be for a long time. And we just have to trust and obey and just know that God's teaching us in some sort of a way. You know, a little bit of it is because, you know, the pandemic happened and we were quarantined, and it happened for us. It happened like the beginning of March, which was the start of my high school track and field season. And my wife was pregnant with our third, and she came in April, But it was one of those silver lining moments where normally I would be gone all weekend. I'd be gone at track and field meets for practices during the week. But instead, because the season was canceled, I was able to have this time with my newborn and help out my wife with my two other girls that we have. And it was such a great time in that. And I remember, like, at the beginning being like, woe is me. Like, this sucks. Like, I feel bad for my seniors. But then looking back on it, I was like, man, I was really grateful for that time. And God revealed that, you know, those little moments of, you know, you're not going to get that time back. And so it was good to be able to have that. So.
Exactly right, man. What are they saying for you then? I mean, you took advantage of that time. You were able to spend more time with your family, and you'll never get that back. What are they saying for you in terms of track this year, man? How's it looking?
Well, we'll see. I mean, they pushed all the seasons back. So our fall season is actually not going to start until March. Our basketball season is not going to start until after the first of the year, so January. So each season will be about 2 months. So basketball will be January through February. And then the fall season, which includes football, will be March through April. And then our track and field season and baseball and all that other stuff will be May through the end of June. So
wow.
Hoping as we push things back, we'll actually get a season and hopefully be able to get these kids. Because right now it's tough because, you know, a lot of them are hoping to, you know, get a scholarship to another place, to another school. But they need the season to be able to, you know, for colleges to be able to see that. So I'm just hoping and praying that we have something for them to be able to do, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what about you? So did you compete or what were you involved in as a child athletically? Like, were you just kind of running around doing whatever? You know, was track and field a thing right off the bat, or were you thinking like you were going to be, you know, the next, you know, professional, whatever that was for you? Like, what was that? What was it growing up for you?
Man, like I told you, man, I got two brothers. And so we grew up playing everything that was in season. I played baseball I did 1 year of soccer when I was a kid, and we lost every single game and we didn't score a goal all season. So I remember telling my parents, I said, Mom, Dad, I don't think soccer is for me. And you know, my mom and dad are like, yeah, could have told you that already there, stud. You're a little too big for it. So soccer didn't last long for me. And track almost didn't happen, man, honestly, beyond middle school. My older brother was a thrower, and he was really good in middle school. He was a stud. He broke all the records, and he was an animal. And then I came along, and I wasn't very good. Like, I wasn't good at all. And I'll never forget my eighth grade year, we're sitting at the stands at the track after a track meet. Right, the next day, coach has got us all circled up and he's going over everything, like the breakdown of the meet. And he's like, all right, well, we did okay. We really should have won this track meet, but our throwers just didn't do anything, and we didn't get any points from our throwers whatsoever. Had we done that, we'd have won this track meet. And I remember I'm sitting there, I'm looking around like, holy cow, I just got called out. Like, yeah, sorry, coach. I didn't score any points. I didn't place, but it's not like I didn't try. And I was crushed, you know. And that's what's funny is, like, a side note here is, as coaches, we have to remember, like, the words we say stay with people forever. We got to be careful. That, you know, and yeah, you can say, well, just suck it up, McKim, move on. And I did. But when I came to my freshman year, I remember talking to my parents. I was like, it was spring was coming around, and I was like, you know, Mom, Dad, I think I might play baseball. It was just like froze, you know, everyone's looking around, they're like, baseball? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, you haven't played baseball since coach pitch. And I was like, yeah, but track wasn't that good. I'm not very good. I might play baseball. My dad's like, son, you're scared of the ball. What position are you going to play? I was like, I don't know, Dad. That's a good point. So I thankfully, the Lord kept me from playing baseball because it would have gone very poorly. But I gave track another shot in high school. I loved it. Was able to work my way through, go to state a couple times, be an all-state thrower. And then from there, got a scholarship to Northwest Missouri State University, D2 school in my hometown. So my recruiting trip was interesting, right? The coach didn't recruit me because he didn't think I was going to come. And then he finally said, yeah, why don't you come in for a meeting? And my parents came, and dude, like, I was dressed up. Like, as a high schooler, it's the coolest thing to think somebody wants you to be recruited. Yeah. I remember getting dressed up, and we're like, Mom, Dad, we're going to be late. We got to get to this. We got to get to the meeting with the coach, you know. We got to drive across town and and go see him, you know. And, like, so we get there, and we go sit in the waiting room for 2 hours, and the coach never showed up. Literally, we're walking out, right? We're walking out of the building, going to the parking lot. My parents are crushed, you know, because here's their son. He's all excited. He's got the recruiting visit of his hometown school that he already knows everything about anyways. But they're like, they're crushed, and we're walking out, and the coach is like, the coach is walking in. And he's like, hey, where are you guys going? And my dad's like, well, you're 2 hours late, coach. We're leaving. He's like, oh, well, I thought it was now. You guys got time? Let's go talk. So I was like, what is this? We get up there and we go sit in his office, and he talks to me very briefly. And then he says, well, I think you already know your way around campus. Do you want a tour? I was like, nah, I'm good. So then they offered me a scholarship. So I was like, this is the weirdest recruiting visit ever. I don't know if this is how it goes, but it was weird. So
that is weird.
It's amazing how God takes you all these different paths, man. You think about, had I played baseball, I never would have thrown in college. Mm-hmm. I never would have gotten into the Highland Games. I never would have experienced that in the places God took me there and the people that he brought into my life there, which never would have led to my job. It's all these different things. You think of these one small places, these little things that God does that many years we don't see the impact until many years later.
Yeah, that's totally true. And I wasn't a Christian growing up. I share my story with everybody that I have on. And I grew up Catholic, and I went to church as an obligation with my mom, just so, you know, either incentives, like if I knew that I was going to get McDonald's and I get my double quarter pounder with cheese and large fries and like 15 sweet and sour dipping sauces, you know. And
oh yeah.
And so that was kind of like my motivation, was to get things, you know, for myself to go to church. And so but looking back on invitations that I had from friends, you know, to some of their outreach programs at their churches, to just conversations that I would have, to different guys that, you know, if we went on, you know, trips for, you know, for track, or if it was like a band trip or something like that, like, just conversations I would have with certain people and how they would act. And I remember looking back and seeing how they were as Christians. And then I was like, oh, that was God's hand on those things, because it could have been a lot worse, you know, rooming with different guys, the guys that I wanted to at the time, the things that they got in trouble with, and how God kind of kept me out of that. But yeah, I think about those things too. You know, I had a little stint of soccer as well, and I played goalie, and I've told a couple of people that I played goalie and on a team that was really good. And the ball never passed midfield, and I would sit like against the goalpost, and I would find four-leaf clovers like in the grass. And then at one time at halftime, I told my mom that I was hungry, and she went and like got me like chicken nuggets, and I was sitting there eating like a 20-piece chicken nugget like during the game. And people didn't even know that I was on the team. They're like, oh, you were on the team? Oh yeah, that's right. Like, I'm in the team pitcher, guys. Like, that's me right there. But yeah, it's funny though that you have that. What's that?
It's good for your stats. Like, yeah, like Grant, he had 4 shutouts in the last 5 games. Well, really? Like, well, he only had 4 shots on goals.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, not even that, man. Like, honestly, not even that. But it's interesting that you say that you, like, you know, almost quit track to play baseball, because a lot of the people who, you know, I've talked to, just not even on this podcast, but just in general with track and field, have kind of gone the opposite way. They've kind of got burnt out with baseball, and then they wanted to, like, you know, try something different. But yeah, like, that's funny, man. Like, imagine playing baseball. If you're afraid of the ball, like, baseball is probably not for you, you know, at that time. But talk about maybe, like, in college, like, how is your faith? Like, when you were, you know, when you're there, you know, did you find it, you know, because you said you're in your hometown, so, you know, you probably went to the same church, you probably did those things, cause, you know, because your dad was a pastor, obviously you had some accountability that was like, you know, watching it from up close and everything like that. But, you know, your faith during your college moments, and then maybe, you know, talk about just how you were able to stay humble during the times, or maybe you weren't, within success of like things that you were doing as far as a thrower in college?
Sure. Man, my faith really, really grew in college. I felt many times when I was a high schooler, I was alone. Like my high school didn't have a lot of believers in the school. I didn't have a lot of friends that were, they were in my school. A lot of my friends were in the youth group and they went to the small towns around us. And so many times in high school, I just felt alone and I felt frustrated and I didn't know, I was like, man, God, there's nobody out there for me to, a fellow Christian brother to hang out with, in my school. And then when I got into college, I got involved with campus ministries. I got into a Baptist Student Union. I got into Fellowship Christian Athletes, Campus Crusade for Christ. I got into all these different campus ministries. I was like, man, this is awesome. Here's fellow believers. Here's fellow dudes, especially that are doing life and trying to live for the Lord. And I can not only do sports with them, I can hang out with them. And to me, it was amazing. And it really, really grew my faith. And I just trusted. I just loved it. I loved college. It was so much fun. It was so much better than high school for me. And I felt like God really, really grew me there. And I learned a lot in my time just about me, right? And that's what throwing does. As you know, Grant, throwers are the biggest head cases I feel like on the track team. It's like, oh, coach, the ring's a little smooth. It's too fast. Yeah. Oh, coach, this concrete is so rough. It's such a slow ring. I'm not going to throw well at all. Oh, coach, the wind is horrible today. What are we going to do? I mean, you name it, and throwers deal with it. And I was the same way. And that's something that God really grew for me within me post-college when I was throwing in the Highland Games is, like, in college, man, I was a choke artist. Every year I went to six indoor and outdoor – not 6 years, but three years of indoor and outdoor nationals. And I was always ranked to be an All-American. I came out of there with one All-American finish. It was an eighth place finish one time. And I was the biggest choke artist. Mm. And that's where – and in post-college, you're right, not to get ahead of us here, I guess, but post-college is where God kind of showed me and helped me through some of that. But, man, college was awesome, man. I wish – everyone talks about high school being the best years. To me, college was the best by far.
Yeah. So maybe talk a little bit more of that. Cause I was kind of that way. I was ranked, I didn't necessarily have a big, collegiate career, but in high school, like I was number one on my team, I was ranked in my conference. And then when I got into my district, it was just as an easy as like my coach did not come to my meet because he had obligations and I knew that already, but I just choked. And he previous to that would say, I would know if you were going to have a good meet on your first like warm-up throw. And I just remember just being like, whatever, man, what are you talking about? And I was if it wasn't good, like I was such a mental case. Like I was so like, the pressure, the thing was, it wasn't for me, like the pressure of like being in like big meets or anything like that. It was just like, I don't insecurities or whatever that was for me, just if it came off bad, I would just mess with my mind every single time. So, can you pinpoint it to what it was for you that, when you got into those situations that, that maybe you were successful?
Yeah, for me, man, it was honestly, it didn't click until college, till post-college. When I got in the Highland Games, that was one of the things I addressed. In the Scottish Highland Games, there's, eight different events, and you've got to do what's like the big man decathlon minus the running, right, thankfully. And so you've got to do well in every event, right, and you've got to brush it off if you do poorly in one event so you can try to make up points in another. You got to do well in every event along the whole spectrum of the competition so that you can hopefully do well in the overall. And so one thing I told myself was like, man, I got to fix this because I can't choke. I can't do this. I can't let the pressure get to me. So what I did is I threw against ghost throwers all the time post-college for 13 years. I don't know how many thousands of throws I took against people who never existed at practice. Right. So I would set it up like in the lightweight for distance. I would say, all right, I have three throws. Matt is throwing 82. Mike is throwing 81. I've got to throw 83 on this next throw. And so I treat it like a competition. I'll create the pressure, and then I would throw. And many times I would fail. but many times I would succeed. So what happened is when I got into those competitions, and there were times at nationals and worlds where it came down to the last throw, and had I approached it like I did in college, I'd have crumbled. But Lord blessed me to where I could understand it better and I just was able to compartmentalize it better as I got in when I got to post college. And that's what I think that we sometimes forget as coaches. And you know, I've got five boys, and so I'm trying to coach them, and I'm helping a local kid here. And it is the understanding of, like, when we go to basketball practice or football practice, how many times does the coach run through the 2-minute drill? Or you just pressure. They create the situation. Basketball coach used to do this to us all the time. He's like, all right, we're down by 4 with 37 seconds left. What's going to happen? What are we going to do? And I thought about it, and I was like, man, as a thrower, at least for me growing up, I never did that. It was just throw, repetition. When I finally realized that as post-college is when I really started to do so much better in those situations. So I would do two different things. I do that, like I said, where I would say, okay, final three throws, I have to throw 82 or 83 or whatever the mark may be, I've got to move up. Or I would say, all right, I have 6 throws. At least 4 of them have to be over 83 feet, for example. And I would do that. And I'm like, ah, man, I messed the first one. Okay, well, you better get it on the next 3, right? And so I would create these pressure situations. And that was a huge thing for me. And it's something I'm going to try with my boys and other people that I coach is, I don't know about you, man, but I think about it, like all those years of throwing and track, it was always about reps, right? It was never about situations. And so that's something, I don't know if do you ever do that with your throwers, or do you ever find any advantages in it or anything?
No. And I never thought about that way for the longest time that I've coached, just to think about, like, you know, you gave the analogy of like the basketball coach giving us like the, you know, 2-minute down by 4, like we got to do these situations. And, you know, that's a great way to kind of get kids to understand pressure and the mindset of what that would look like. You know, I'm a big believer in having kids compete against their own self. And so they don't, I tell my kids, don't watch other throwers. Like, we're all about just, you know, trying to best what we're going to do. And if we focus on how we are doing at that time, then the successes and the PRs will come within that. So we're not necessarily comparing ourselves to other people, but you know, that's a great way of, you know, doing the same exact thing with those throwers, within themselves, to, you know, be like, all right, man, you have like, you know, 2 throws to hit this mark. Like, the cutoff is, you know, 100 feet for the javelin. Like, are you able to, you know, hit that mark? You know, that's a great way of, you know, in practice, try to get, you know, those kids to understand pressure. So when they're in those situations and they know that, okay, man, I have 2 throws left, I got to throw over 100 to like get into the finals, you know, then it's just another practice, another thing to do. But the only thing I pressure them with is, you know, hey, like, if you throw less than this person or this mark right here, then you got to buy me a double cheeseburger at the next meet. So you better not do that.
See, I like that. I would put that number way out there though, man.
Yeah.
Get those cheeseburgers. So those are the things I would do. And then I had one other one that I would do, especially for me, like on Scott on hammer days, is I would say, like, okay, I have to throw 4 throws over 115 feet in the heavy hammer today to be done. And there are days where it's like, boom, 4 in a row. I'm like, sweet, I'm done. And having the strength and the ability to go, okay, it's done. But also those days where, man, it's just not working. And I would get frustrated, and then I would relax, and then I would reevaluate my technique, and then bang, I could hit my throws. And so those 3 different things helped me, I feel like, because no matter the situation when I was throwing, whether that was I had to get a big throw on my last throw, or I had to be consistent, those 4 out of 6 throws, or I had to hit a big throw, right? At the time, I was able to do that, I feel like, because I had spent thousands of throws throwing against ghost throwers at practice, you know? And I've created the meet or games-like situation in practice. And that's something I wish I'd have done a long time ago. I might have had might have done better. I don't know.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you remember, you know, when you were competing, you know, was there ways that you were honoring the Lord, like with how you threw? I mean, I coached a short stint of cross country. I know that that doesn't surprise you because of like how I look and the build and the fact that I was a throws coach for so long. But I did coach cross country for 5 years, and I had a kid who ultimately just had this routine of like, he was going to like, you know, run out from the starting line, stop and just, you know, and pray openly, like, you know, look up to the, you know, look up to the heavens and just pray. And like, he didn't care. And it wasn't for show, it was for just to glorify the Lord with this race. And that's what he did consistently. And then after it was done, whether like he had a good race or not, like he did the same exact thing. And I was in his own just young wisdom. I mean, obviously I wasn't a Christian like when I competed like in high school, but like I just applauded the fact that he was able to do that. But you know, coming from for you, like, you know, how was that something that you did? Like, how were you able to be a witness to those when you're competing in the Highland Games? Like, how was, I mean, obviously we were not like, you know, throwing the Bible at people or like, you know, passing out the Gideon or whatever like that. But you know, how was that for you?
Yeah, and that's another thing I wanted to do differently from college, is I felt like many times in college I was very self-focused. You know, I was worried about throwing far. I had dreams when I was in college that I just wanted to compete at USA Nationals in the shot put. That's all I wanted. And things, I got bigger and stronger by my junior and senior year, but through lesser distance than I did my sophomore year. It was just really frustrating. And that was just God's way of closing one door to open up another, right? But so when I decided in the Scottish Highland Games, many times you have to wear a competition shirt. Sometimes you don't. And so I started this. It's actually wearing it today. You can see it, but the other people can't, right? Nice. The believe shirt. And then on the back is Mark 1:15. Jesus said, the kingdom of God is near. Repent and believe the good news. And so I'd wear this bright red shirt with believe on the front, the verse on the back, because I wanted to share with people my faith. And what you have to realize with the Scottish Highland Games, it's not exactly always the greatest greatest spot, right? It's these festivals are built on alcohol and debauchery, right? Through all this history, let's just be honest. They're built on competition and against clans, if you will, but it was also centered around those things. And so I wanted to be a light in a dark place. And so God, you know, and it just kind of grew from there. I wore the shirt every time I would compete. If I had to wear a games competition shirt, I would wear that. But after the comp, before the comp, I'd wear the shirt. I had a hoodie. I always had a towel, right? I'm very fair complected, a lot of freckles. I burn and then peel and then burn again. I never tan. And so I always would have a towel over my head, you know, trying to protect from the sun. So I was like, well, shoot, I should put Believe on my shirt, on my towel too. Just getting that out there. And then I have my website, believethrower.com, which has the ABCs of becoming a Christian. And what's amazing, man, and what God taught me through the years was, no matter how big or small we think our platform is, God can use it. God can use it for great things. And I think we as throwers sometimes think, you know what? We're not on ESPN. We're not doing crazy things. We're not having all these followers and doing these things. But you know what? That doesn't matter, because God can do awesome things in our things that we do. And even if that's just impact one person for eternity, man, that right there is worth it. And the stories, man, the opportunities that God's given me to share my faith with people through the years, just wearing a red shirt, throwing sticks and implements, you know, throwing things in a field, wearing a kilt, throwing heavy stuff, being a man of strength. God's opened up so many doors for me to share my faith. It's been awesome to see, and it's beyond anything I would have ever imagined. And so I think that's been a challenge for me for years, man, is just do not limit God based on what you think your limitations are.
Yeah, that's totally true. I love what you said there. Like, no matter how big or small our platform is, God can do amazing things. And I think that's so true, because you know, in the day and age of like, you know, social media and, you know, playing the comparison game, you know, a lot of these kids feel like, you know, cause I talk about these kids cause I'm a teacher, you know, and a mentor to some of these kids at my school, you know, but they believe that like, oh, I gotta like, you know, figure out how I can earn the most money, or like the only way that I can like be someone of influence for Christ is either, number one, like be a pastor, or be a missionary, or teach at a Christian school, you know? And so they have this box, but I want them to believe that like the Lord could you know, bless you with whatever. And he's going to use your platform, you know, to be able to spread the news. Like, you could be a garbage man or a garbage woman, and the Lord will bless your platform because people need to hear your story, and they need to be able to see you either like how you act, like, or through your acts of service, or like how you talk to other people. Like he will reveal those things to you. It doesn't matter like the certain title that you have. You don't have to be a pastor to preach the word. Like, you don't have to be a missionary to go and spread the word to other people. Like, it's understanding that, like you said, like, no matter how big or small your platform is, like, God can do amazing things. I think that's so awesome.
Yeah,
thanks for sharing that, man. So BelieveThrower.com, I was kind of searching that a little bit and looking through there. And I noticed that you wrote a couple books.
Yeah, if you want to call them that. I probably should have done a lot more pictures that had been a lot longer. But no, I've written two, I guess you could say three books. So two of them, one of them is called Behemoth. It's just my training philosophy that I've used. So through the years of throwing, right? So people would ask, hey, can you write a program for me? What do you do? And finally, one day I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna write it down. And I wrote down my training philosophy, and it's a 14-week training block that I've used for myself forever, and I use for throwers that I work with. And also, I have another throwing book called Throw Heavy, which is just kind of like a step-by-step guide to the throwing in the Scottish Highland Games. And so, but man, what's great about that is that I slipped the gospel in there, right? In the back, yeah. It's got the ABCs of becoming a believer, how to know how to come to a saving relationship with Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things where people, it's the old bait and switch, right? Pulling a fast one on them, right? They're like, oh, I'm going to order this thing from this guy and get this book, you know? And they're not realizing they're getting the gospel in there too. But with that said, man, I think I've given away more than I've sold. And that's not saying I'm a very giving person. It's just saying I ain't sold very many.
No, that's awesome, man. Like, I've obviously resources that are needed for some people. And that's so cool that you are able to do that. But, you know, I want to switch gears a little bit, you know, because I love your page, man. I just honestly, like, I look forward to the things that you post, you know, when they come out. And, you know, simple things that you have, like, for those of you who don't know, Daniel puts out on his story, you know, some scripture. He takes a picture of, you know, scripture, and it has an underline, and then usually it's like four or five arrows that point to the scripture, and then whatever the scripture is talking about, it's just like, just the meat of what would you want to do, or what you're supposed to get out of it. And I just love that. is that something that, I mean, I guess I should back up. Is that, you know, you're reading scripture? Sorry. When you read scripture, are you going like kind of daily through that? Or is it just stuff like a devotional that you see? Or you know, do you kind of bounce around and just whatever comes out to you, you can throw it out there?
Yeah, man. I started putting that on my storyline, I guess, a few months, I don't know, 6 months back or something. I don't remember. But what it is just, man, honestly, it's just my daily quiet time, wherever God's taking me through it. So I was previously had started in Genesis, read right through Revelation. Typically for years, I've been a jump around type of guy, read a book of the Bible, and then wherever God, I feel like God's leading me next. But lately it's been, so when I underline those, it's just, I am a just tangible Bible guy, right? I know everyone's got their apps. Everyone highlights from that. But man, for me personally, retention and application just from an old school Bible is where it's at. And honestly, I prefer the pencil or pen to underline even than the highlighter. Cause I just like, and then I like when I, cause I underline what I feel like God has challenged me with that day or something he spoke to me in that day. And then also what's cool, man, is as you go through time, a couple years later, you're reading through or months later, you're reading through and you see that underline, you're like, oh, that must've been important. What was God saying to me at that point? And be able to recall that and go back to that is huge. So I always encourage people and challenge people. Just, I know there's lots of devotions out there. I know that you got an app and there's all these great things. But to me, nothing beats just sitting down with a Bible and just a pen or pencil or a highlighter and just just being open to whatever God's going to speak to you that day.
Yeah, totally. That's what I should. I totally agree. And, you know, there's times where, like, I'm going to start reading in Timothy or, you know, wherever. And I remember I was, you know, opened up my Bible and I was like, okay, I'm gonna read through Romans. And like, it was like Romans, like chapters 5-8, like the whole thing was highlighted. And I was like, oh, okay. Like,
yep.
There's a lot going on there that we all need. But yeah, I think that's just so cool that you, like, within the midst of the things that you're doing, to be able to have that platform. Do you find that, I don't know, maybe you haven't or whatever, but do you get negative feedback through that? Do you get people who are like, I didn't sign up for that. Like, this is not what I wanted, you know?
You know, I kind of wondered about that because I think from Instagram, I guess that following has grown slowly enough that people who follow me pretty well know what they're getting.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about God. I'm going to talk about my kids. I'm going to make fun of lifters and throwers, and I'm gonna talk about how I like snack cakes.
Yeah. So
they kind of know what they're getting, I think. But I thought I might get some trolls on there that would, but man, that's what's crazy, man, is that just in that little thing, because I feel like just posting that daily on my story is such a small thing, right?
Yeah.
But just this morning I had a lady, I didn't even know her, right, but she follows me, and she goes, hey, I've been in a dark spot lately. It's a 1-year anniversary for my dad's death, but thank you for posting this. I can just respond and say, hey, I'm praying for you as you grieve through this. I'm very sorry. Or somebody might even, dude, it's weird how God works these just little things. Like we talked about the platform, just whatever your platform is. And somebody else will respond, I don't know them, right? And they'll send me a message that says, hey, I just really needed this today. Thanks for pointing that verse out. And it's like, wow, what we think is just something so minuscule and so small. I mean, God can speak, because you never know, right? The words we say, the things we do, you never know how God is going to use that in someone else's life. You never know how God's going to use it in your own life too.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
Yeah. That's totally cool. You know, and I think you know this, but I have that other memes for throwers. I run that page, and you know, I felt a huge conviction, because, like, I mean, it blew up, like, within the year, you know, the year that we've been in, a couple of months that we've been around. And, you know, I just felt this huge conviction of, like, if I'm able to, like, have influence and just kind of build community through, you know, just memes about, you know, throwers and the stupid things that we do, like, I need to be able to do something that's bigger than me and about my first passion in life, which is, you know, Christ. And so that's kind of how I came about, like, putting together this Faith and Field podcast and Instagram page, is to be able to do that, to kind of share that, and to, you know, be able to, you know, use this platform and however God is gonna use it. And honestly, like, there have been times where I'm like, oh man, I don't even have 100 followers, and is this even worth it, and all this stuff. And, you know, and I just have to remember, like, it's not about me. It's not about, like, the followers that I have, and Christ is going to use it. And whether it's, like, you know, whoever I get on, like, obviously there's a need for other people to hear those stories to help them in those relationships. And I feel like that's, you know, relatable to, you know, just as simple as, like, the, you know, the scripture that you put on there, to that jumps out at people, whether it's, you know, just a one line or, you know, a whole section of scripture. So, but yeah, that's totally cool to be able to do that. But yeah, let's kind of move along and talk a little bit about, you know, kind of my favorite thing. And obviously I can't partake in the Little Debbie snacks anymore, because I'm gluten free, and I can't deal with that. So, but how did you become the ambassador for the Little Debbie snacks? So let's talk about, or walk through me how you did that.
Excuse me. it is kind of, I've always loved Little Debbie, right? So Little Debbie snack cakes, since I was a little kid, we would get those as a family, especially on road trips. Mom would always get our favorites. She got Swiss rolls for my older bro, oatmeal cream pies for the younger bro, and then I was a big Star Crunch guy back then. I've since moved on, maybe matured in my taste a little bit, but still love a good Star Crunch. And so that was just always part of it. And so I started just doing these videos, just having fun. And part of some of that was my love and appreciation for Little Debbie Snack Cakes. Well, I posted a few things, and then lo and behold, one of my followers was related to Little Debbie herself and told me and said, "Hey man, I just want you to let you know." And I think I posted one time like a screenshot of how I applied to be a Little Debbie brand ambassador. He's like, "Hey man, I'm going to see what I can do. I'm going to talk to Little Debbie and see if I can get you." And I'm like, "Okay, yeah, bro. Thanks. Whatever." He's like, "No, really. Like, I can't remember if it was his aunt maybe or his grandma." And I was like, "You're serious? Like Little Debbie is real?" "Yeah, she's real." So long story short, he showed her some of my stuff. She actually walked down the hall to the marketing people and said, "Hey, this guy seems like he's a good fit for us. I don't know what we can do with him, but we need to do something." So the marketing folks talked to me like, "Yeah, man, you're not going to believe this, but Little Debbie asked for you herself." And I was like, "What? That's awesome." So, and it works out really well, man. The Little Debbie brand is a very solid family. They're great. They're, you know, they're very conservative brand. And so it works out well. Turns out like their CEO and VPs all love to train.
Nice.
So they really dig my videos, I guess, and they love to train themselves. And so this whole persona and the fact of taking a snack cake and treating it as like a post-workout fuel is definitely it's definitely uncharted territory.
Yeah. Then you guys, is that an actual lifting team or is that just kind of a brand that you guys put together? Like that's just.
Yeah, that's a part of it as well. Well, what happened, Grant, was last year, I write the programming I work for Sornex, and so we do this month-long in December called Deadcember. And it's a daily deadlifting routine, you know, training routine where you deadlift 5 days a week. You know, it's all month, and it accumulates with a big PR party at the end. And so I knew that was coming up, so I was like, you know what? Every day that I do this, I always prescribe, like, post-workout is like a Little Debbie. It's like a fudge round recipe, or it's some kind of, you know, oatmeal cream pie thing. And so I made these green shirts and they said Debbie's and deadlifts, and they had Christmas tree cakes on them, right? And nice. A couple bars crossed. And I was like, "Oh, this is fun." I ordered a couple, you know, and I had some made. And this was before and so I made these, I put them on my website, and I'd sold a few, and I had just gotten out to the deer stand. I like to hunt. I'm not very good at it. And so I'm out there in the stand and I get a phone call from Collegedale, Tennessee on my phone. And the only thing I know in Collegedale, Tennessee is Little Debbie headquarters. And yeah. So I was like, "Whoa, oh no." Cause I just released the shirts and I was like, "Oh man, this could be really bad." And I was just like, I remember just like sitting there being like, "Hello." He's like, "Hey Dan, this is so-and-so. I'm with Little Debbie. Well, we were talking with the legal team," and I'm like, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. Please don't sue me. I was just playing around. It's just a fun shirt." And he's like, you know, I'm just like freaking out thinking I'm going to get sued by this billion-dollar company. He's like, "Hey, man, I just want you to know what you created is an infringement on a trademark." And I was like, "I'm so sorry, man. I didn't know. He's like, "Yeah, it's all trademark. You can't do that." But our VP said, "Hey, I know he's not supposed to make these shirts, but I really want one. So how can I get one?" So I was like, "So you're not going to sue me?" Like, no, we're not going to sue you, but don't make any more. I was like, "Okay, yeah, you got it." So from there, it just kind of grew and started the Little Debbie lifting team. So actually, the shirts and some of the swag I make with that is something where I partner with them and I get all the designs approved. And once they're approved, I got some boxes right here of some of my swag down here. So yeah, once they approve it, I get to sell it out, and it's just fun, right? It's a fun, like we said, it's not an official lifting team yet.
Yeah. I'll tell you what though. I do want one of those lunch boxes. I think those are so cool. The Little Debbie lunch boxes, man. Those are awesome. And then I got to get some stickers so I can, you know, throw those on my hydro flask as well for that. So I can rep the Little Debbie team. But yeah, once they come out with a gluten-free version, you know, I'll ambassador that, you know, I'll be that guy.
I'm trying to think what would be the closest to gluten-free then. What would it have to be, man?
Probably the packaging.
The packaging message.
The box.
Cardboard.
Yeah.
Man. That's true.
I do love the oatmeal. The oatmeal ones.
Is honey gluten-free?
Honey's gluten-free, yeah.
They have honey buns.
I know, but the wheat, though, and they're like, I mean, I could just maybe squeeze it out there. But yeah, the wheat that's in those things, that doesn't work for me. But yeah, as well as those who don't know, and hopefully, you know, soon to find out, you also have, I mean, these hilarious parodies, man, that you do with, like, you know, these stereotypes of lifters. Like, you posted one the other day that just made me like LOL out loud, and I was sharing it to all my buddies, and it was like the squatting, like the squat spotters. That one just had me rolling, man. Like, you know, I love the Jedi.
Yeah, that was a fun one, man. I appreciate that.
But like, those are good. So where do you, I mean, obviously it's because of like, maybe I should back up. So when did weightlifting become like a thing for you? Like, you were just kind of like all about it. Obviously you worked for the Sorenex,
yep,
and company, and they're big install like weightlifting equipment to company. So when did that kind of love and passion come from, and maybe share a little bit about that?
I lifted through high school a little bit, but I was a typical high school kid, I think, and I didn't really get into it. Then my freshman year of college, I was like, yeah, I like to throw and I'm training pretty hard. And then I had hernia surgery. So I was out, like no throwing, no lifting for a couple months. And I was like, dude, this is horrible. And it just like hit me with this passion that I love to train, I love to throw. And I became a real big fan of the sport at the time. And so it just like ballooned, so much so that I felt like my throws coach's training was too easy. So I would, dude, this is going to make you cringe as a throws coach, right? So I would go train myself on my own program 2 hours a day. And then I would do his lifting program, which was like an hour and 15. And then we'd go throw for 2 hours. And then I would do like any sprints and stuff for about 30, 45 minutes after that. And I'm sitting there going like, bro, why can't I get any gains? I just don't get it. Just like crushing my soul into the ground with all this work, you know, because at the time I thought, oh, more is better, more is better. So, but I'm a meathead, man. I love to train and I love to throw. And so it's been a great, great pairing. So from there, man, it's just honestly, man, these videos just come from long drives for work or on my mower, suburban dad, you know, and I'm mowing and I think of some random video ideas. So yeah, man, you go the gamut, from CrossFitters to powerlifters to throwers to throws coaches. I don't know if you've seen my throws coaches
video. Oh yeah, I've seen it. I trust me, all my throwers have seen it too, and my friends, and I've been tagged a lot of being identified with some of them as well. So I've seen it.
Awesome.
No, but it's all good though. But yeah, but I mean, the strength family, man, I'm honestly like, I'm a big advocate to like get Netflix to like get that on a series, man. That is gold, man. How did you come up with that?
Oh man, I don't know how I came up with that one. I was just, I think it was a long drive for work, you know, and I was just thinking and I thought, oh man, it'd be kind of cool, the strength family, you know, or the strengths. And I'm glad you like it, because those are probably my favorite ones to make. And I giggle when I edit them. And then when it comes down to it, I post it. I'm like, oh man, people didn't think that one was very funny. So I appreciate that you like it, because I have one in my mind that I was actually driving a lot yesterday, and I scripted another one in my mind that I think is going to be funny. And if nothing else, maybe Grant will laugh at it.
Oh, dude, I'll be sharing it up. I was thinking of like something you could probably do is like maybe like a grocery store outing for the strength family. Like, how would that look like?
I don't know,
put your cards, like what are the different ones that they like, you know, the different, you know, proteins, or I don't know, then, you know, organic foods or the meat section. I don't know. Like that's.
Oh yeah, we got to go keto if it's CrossFitter. You got to find kilo or paleo in there somewhere.
Exactly. It's so good, man. But yeah, I thought about that, and then, like a cheat day. Like what would the cheat day look like for the strength family if they were to like have a cheat day? Like, I just thought.
You mean every day for a thrower,
right? Yeah, exactly. But hey, man, I just appreciate the time that we've had, like just talking about, you know, all things from, you know, your walk from with God and just the, you know, the things that you've been doing. Is there anything that you want to share, anything like that? Like, is there anything like, you know, just lastly that you'd like to share or, you know, I mean, we could talk for hours, man. Like,
I know, you know. We shoot the breeze, man. We're a couple of throwers. I'm surprised we haven't talked. I will say, you noted the quarter pounder. Did you know when you go to McDonald's, you can get Big Mac sauce on a quarter pounder?
I do now.
Well, you're welcome, my friend, because that'll change your life. You know, I love the Big Mac sauce, and then somebody told me that once. I was like, whatever. I drove up to the drive. I'm like, I'll take a quarter pounder meal. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, can I get a Big Mac sauce on it? And he's like, yeah. Anything else? I was like, really? He's like, yeah, man, we do it all the time. Pull around. So I'll leave you with that, my friend.
There you go. Yeah, I haven't actually partaked in a quarter pounder in a long time just because of the gluten allergy. So,
but the patty is gluten-free, right?
You know, you never know at McDonald's, bro.
Man.
Yeah, I don't know.
The gluten-free life is tough, man.
I know. The gluten-free life is – it's actually gotten better over the past couple of years, but it is tough, though. You know, it is really tough. Yeah. Thank God for, you know, Chick-fil-A and their grilled chickens, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Man. So I'm about that.
You feel a lot better now that you – I don't want to derail us here. You feel a lot better since you went that route?
Well, no, I can always edit these things out, you know. I mean, unless people are really inquiring about my dietary.
No, I'm things. Curious. Like,
no, yeah, honestly, like my joints, like for this is how it happened. So my wife has celiac, so she's gluten-free. Okay. And so then we've been, you know, since we've been married, like I've been eating gluten-free. And then, but when we were first married, like I still go out with the guys and we would go, you know, wherever, get pizza, whatever. But then there was a time where like, you know, first newlyweds and, you know, child's on the way, like you don't have money. Right. Yeah. So can't go out and eat with the guys anymore. So we just eat. So there was a time where probably about like a good 8 months where I was like strictly gluten-free, you know, eating the meals with my wife. Cause I wasn't going to make like two meals for us to eat. Yeah. And so then I went, we had like a birthday party. And I like ate like just a pizza, like a Costco pizza. And I went and lifted like, you know, the day and I had the pizza. And then a couple of days later, like my joints were just like aching, like to the point where like, I thought I like injured myself. Wow. So like 3 or 4 days later, like it would go away and then I would lift again. And then again, I'd have some sort of a gluten thing. And then like, I was like, it must be like my training, like how I'm training and everything like that. So then I didn't train for like probably 2 weeks, went away. And then it all of a sudden just came back because I was still eating gluten. And I was like, my wife's like, it's gluten. Like it's gotta be.
Wow.
And so then I was like, whatever. So then, I mean, it was to the point where I couldn't walk. Like it was just so bad. So then like, I was like, okay, I'm not going to do it. So I didn't eat gluten for like, probably a good like month and a half, and then I felt good, and then I was like, let's just see if I have this donut, like what really would happen. So I had a maple bar donut, and then after that, like again, right to my knees and my ankle joints, like I just to the point where like I was on crutches. And so after that I was like, no, not gonna have it. So since then, probably a good solid, I don't know, 5 years now, like no joint pain or anything. But if things are like cross contaminated, so Mod Pizza has like a gluten friendly crust, and sometimes like if they don't change their gloves or, you know, because they use the same thing, it'll kind of get me a little bit. And then recently, probably over the past year, has been dairy. Like dairy's been really bad for inflammation on my joints too. So now I'm straight gluten free, dairy free, and I feel a lot better as far as like how my joints feel, just how I feel in general. Like I don't have that pain anymore, which is kind of crazy how that stuff works.
Wow, that's wild, man. I'm glad you figured it out though.
Yeah, like, I had to sacrifice a lot, you know, the quarter pounders and the Debbie cakes, which was a little tough for me. But, yeah. You know, I encourage my throwers who don't have that. When we ever stop at a convenience store, I'm like, yeah, this is the one. Like, you got to get this one. You got to get these. Like, so I'm endorsing the little Debbie with my throwers, because that's basically what I was fueled on too when I was growing up. Like the oatmeal cream ones are so good.
Oh man, that's the goat, bro. The goat is the oatmeal cream pie.
For sure. Yeah, man. Do you, any last words you wanna say or anything like that?
Good, man. I sure appreciate the time, man. It was good to just chat and just shine light, man. It was good.
Yeah, appreciate that. All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in to episode 11 of the Faith and Field podcast with Daniel McKim. If you haven't already, you need to, like, right after you're done with this episode, go on Instagram, give him a follow. It's at McKim Daniel, McKimDaniel. Or go on his website, BelieveThrower.com. Get some Little Debbie strength team gear. Check out what he's doing. But again, Daniel, thank you so much. I appreciate your time, man. Such a great conversation. Looking forward to seeing, you know, what else you put out there as far as, you know, your on your page, and hopefully Netflix will give you a call.
My pleasure, buddy. It's an honor, brother. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.